Welcome to the Southern Ground Podcast, provided by Alabama Extension through Auburn University. Extension educators Shane Harris and Dr. Chip East discuss seasonal lawn and garden topics, address common questions, and provide the practical solutions you want to know. Let's dig into our Southern Ground.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Southern Ground. I'm Shane Harris. I'm the one to serve as one of the horticulturists here for Alabama Cooperative Extension System. I've got my longtime buddy here for this podcast, Dr. Chip East, who's a commercial horticulturist for Alabama Extension.
Good morning, Shane. How are you?
I'm doing well. Chip, now we got, people are going to think we're crazy today talking about this topic, and we're going to talk about snakes.
We get this question a lot, Shane, and I'm excited to have Dr. Wes Anderson here with us today. He's a snake expert. And he's going to enlighten us on a lot of things about snakes. We're glad to have you, Wes.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me.
Give us your full background. You serve as our wildlife specialist, and give us a little bit of your specialty areas here with Extension and Auburn University.
Yeah, so here at Extension, I'm a wildlife specialist. I'm one of two specialists within the system, and I deal with pretty much anything and everything, but a lot of it is backyard wildlife, especially nuisance wildlife, invasive species, and then some non-game wildlife as well. And the nuisance and the non-game, that ties in really well to what we're talking about today, which is snakes. They're one of my favorite things.
So our topic is, there's a snake. What kind of snake is this? The fear and the concern comes, is that a poisonous snake? But let's first talk about, Wes, about the definition. Is it venomous or is it non-venomous? Explain the difference between that.
I guess first we'll start off in Alabama, we got about 45 species of snakes. And I say about because, like most everybody, scientists like to argue. So we can't even come down on that number. But we do have what we would say is six venomous snakes.
And what would be the difference between venomous versus poisonous?
Yeah. So venomous versus poisonous. So venom has to be injected. So think of like a hypodermic needle. So a wasp is venomous. Those fire ants are venomous. Even though people like to say they bite, they're actually stinging. And snakes are venomous. Poisonous means it's ingested. There are poisonous mushrooms. A lot of people think about pufferfish, a risky thing to eat. But that's the big difference between poisonous and venomous. However, most snakes that are dangerous are venomous. There are some snakes that are poisonous because of what they eat. So it does get a little bit complicated. But as far as a medical concern, it's the venomous snakes that we're worried about.
Whether it be venomous or non-venomous, are there some snakes more aggressive than others?
There are, but I'll have the caveat that, let's say defensive. There are snakes that are more likely to bite. For non-venomous ones, black racers. If you ever get a black racer in your hand, there's a very high chance that it's going to bite you. As far as the venomous snakes, a lot of people think about cottonmouths because they are scary because when they're afraid, they open their mouth. They'll rattle their tail. But there have been studies done that show that cottonmouths are actually less likely to bite you than a copperhead. So as far as the venomous snakes that are most likely to bite, it would be a copperhead.
And I've been to some of the snake meetings that Dr. Anderson has put on, and I learned from that copperhead is the most common venomous snake in Alabama.
Is definitely the most common throughout most of the state, except if you're down in coastal Mobile or Baldwin counties, you don't have copperheads down there. You've got other things. But yeah, throughout much of the state, and they do much better in suburban areas than pretty much all our other venomous snakes. So even if you're in the suburbs, or even I know people who have found them in the center of Birmingham. So they're around. They're all over the place.
We've got six basic venomous snakes that are of concern in Alabama.
We do. Yeah, and they are, so we've got three different types of rattlesnakes. We've got the timber rattlesnake, which is the most common rattlesnake throughout much of Alabama and the South. We've got the eastern diamondback, which is really only in the southern third of the state. They're very associated with longleaf pine, very associated with the coastal plain, so you get out of that and the chance of seeing one is very low. Then you've got the itty-bitty pygmy rattlesnake, which only gets about a foot long. So those are the three rattlesnakes. Then you've got copperheads. You've got cottonmouths, which is the same thing as a water moccasin. And then finally, the coral snake, the eastern coral snake, which if you see one in Alabama, depending on who you are, you're very lucky or unlucky. They're more common down in Florida.
when people call you, call us, put things on social media out there, a lot of people will take a picture of a snake and they want to know, what is this snake? And part of that is because of a concern. Is it a venomous snake or not? Then what do I do with it? And then our conversation later on is, why is it here and how can I control it? What are some basic identification tips that you could give our listeners? And we don't have video to show anything, but we do have resources online that you can go back, great publications, great videos to help you identify things. But there's a snake. What should I be looking for?
Everybody wants, you know, one clear answer or one clear identifier to look for. Unfortunately, it's not that easy. Me and many other people, we can see a picture of a blurry snake and tell you exactly what it is, but that's only because we've looked at thousands or tens of thousands or maybe even more photos of snakes over our lives. So there are some things to look for. So people say a triangular or diamond-shaped head. Yes and no. No, in that many of our non-venomous snakes, when they are afraid, they're going to flatten out their head too. So that water snake or that rat snake, they're doing the same thing, and that could confuse people and think that it's a venomous snake and they're in danger, and then they're going to act how they're going to act. So instead of thinking about it in 2D terms, so don't just say it's a triangle or it's a diamond, but if it looks like that and it's also big and blocky, so you're looking for a blocky head, because the other non-venomous snakes, when they are afraid and doing that, they're going to flatten their head out quite a bit to be able to do that. Pattern is important, but I guess before I get too much into that, it really is important to use multiple characteristics. You want to know what the body shape looks like, the head shape, the pattern, or what a typical pattern should look like. When you're processing it, it's like, when I see a copperhead, it's not like, okay, this meets XYZ. It's like, okay, I'm familiar enough with this that's a copperhead. But yeah, looking for body shape, pattern is very important. So for example, with copperheads, guidance has shifted over the years. I guess back when more people were familiar with hourglasses, they would say that the dark bands look like an hourglass going across the back. These days, when really we only have hourglasses in board games, people more say that the dark bands look like a Hershey Kiss going up the side. So pattern is definitely one way to figure it out. You know, our venomous snakes, or at least our vipers, so everything but the coral snake, does have an elliptical or cat-shaped pupil, but you probably should, if you don't know what the snake is, you should not be getting close enough to figure that out unless you have a very, very good camera. So that's not a great marker for the general public to tell. And also, snakes' eyes dilate, or their pupils dilate just like ours do. So in the dark, a copperhead's going to have a pretty round pupil. But yeah, overall, you know, it's going to be a combination of characteristics that you should use. Body shape, pattern, what the head looks like.
And that includes don't reaching down and just picking it up and getting close like you talked about and think you know what it is. A lot of people make a lot of assumptions. Those patterns, even as professionals, those patterns can be very confusing in the shade and the light. They're different times of the year, the age of the snake. Every time I see a small snake, it always looks like a copperhead because of the patterns. It's not mature. So it's very confusing, Chip.
To me, the smaller the snake, the harder it may be for me to identify which one it is. I was potting plants one day at a nursery, and I grabbed a handful of bark, and I had a handful of snakes. And we later identified those we think are king snakes, but I had a handful, but we took them to our county agent is who identified those for us at the time. But when I see a little snake, I mean a 6 inches long, small snake, I look at the scales toward the tail. Can you explain that to us? And that's how I identify, is it venomous or not?
Even if you don't know if it's venomous or non-venomous, just don't touch it, don't restrain it. Our pit vipers, you know, their fangs are folded in their mouths. So when they open their mouths to bite, they have to stick them up. And that means that their fangs are on muscles. So they can actually move their fangs around a bit. And there have been cases of somebody, you know, holding it behind the head. It sticks a fang out of the side of its mouth and just twists its head a little bit and pokes them right in the thumb. So just be careful in that regard. You know, we have a few snakes that are going to change color or pattern as they get older. And I guess the one that that is venomous that that happens most often with is the cottonmouth. So cottonmouths, when they're babies, they look a lot more like copperheads, although there are some differences there. We say that the cottonmouth has a ragged or pixelated edge to its bands. But as cottonmouths get older, oftentimes that pattern is going to fade, and then it can be more difficult for people to tell the difference between a cottonmouth and a water snake.
Well, I've looked at the sheds, the skins, on the farm fixing fences one day, and there's an old dead pine leaned up against another tree, and there were three snake skins on that. It wasn't there, I don't know, a week or two before, but there were three. So I would say that came from three different snakes, and I looked at those skins. I couldn't identify the snake. I mean, you might could, but I could tell that it was non-venomous.
How could you tell that?
From the skin and the scales near the tail. That's what I was...
Explain that for our listeners. And again, we've got great publications, good visual aids for you to go back and look at resources based on what we're discussing.
You know, so looking at the tail is most useful if you have a shed skin in hand. That's really the only time you should be doing it. But under the tail, you're going to have bands of scales. And if those scales are divided, then it's non-venomous. If they're not, then it is venomous.
And that's up to the anal region, correct?
Yeah. So a lot of people, you know, okay, what is a snake? What the body parts of a snake? You know, you just got this long tube, essentially. And a lot of people think that, oh, well, most of that must be tail. It's really not. In most snakes, it's about 15 or 20% of the body. So you will see that opening on the underside. We call that the cloacal opening. From there to the tip of the tail is where you want to be looking at the scales.
And that's important. If people find that shed skin unexpectedly, like, then people begin to sort of freak out. Oh, there's been a snake here. But then you can sort of tell, you know, based on that identification, at least narrow it down somewhat. Because, again, people sort of freak out. Do I have a rattlesnake or copperhead in my house or under my porch or in the flower bed or something?
When people show that to me, Wes, everyone I've looked at has been non-venomous. I don't know what I would say to somebody if it was a venomous, and that's because it is pretty easy to determine when you have the skin. But I hate to lie to somebody, but boy, that would scare them if they caught that in their house. I have another question about it. A lot of the venomous snakes are big. Their bodies are big. And do they climb as well as any of them maybe could? You explain that to us. If it's up in a tree, are you more likely to see a venomous or non-venomous up in a tree?
Yeah, up in a tree or really anywhere strange, if it's off the ground, it's almost always a non-venomous snake. Certainly venomous snakes can climb. Copperheads really like to eat cicadas right after they come out of the ground, so they'll be climbing up trees and bushes and stuff to get at them. Timber rattlesnakes have been documented, you know, chest or head high, but it's uncommon. It's a very uncommon thing, whereas species like rat snakes, which is our most common big snake across pretty much all the state, they can climb exceptionally well. They can climb 30, 50 foot up a tree, no problem. You know, they can climb up a brick side of a house because they can just twist their body in such a way that they get in the grooves. But yeah, I do tell people, in general, if you see a snake in a really weird place, 95% of the time it's going to be a rat snake, which is completely harmless.
I had one of those recently come out of the attic of my house. My son took a picture of it and said there's a snake in the attic, and he was coming out from the eaves around the brick and stuff. So, you know, those things are really good climbers, which leads us to talk about snake habitat, Wes. When people start seeing snakes around the house, the barn, poultry, possibly on the porch, tell us a little bit about snake habitat, because the other follow-up question that we get is, why is that snake here?
Sure. And, you know, the snake is there for the same reason that whatever other wildlife is in your backyard is there. There's something that's attracting it, whether it be cover, whether it be food, or whether it be water. And let's talk about cover. You know, snakes can be scary, but lots of things like to eat snakes. Hawks love to eat snakes. So in general, snakes want to stay concealed. They don't want to necessarily be out in the open. And when they're not moving around and looking for food or looking for a mate, they're going to want to conceal themselves. So anything you might have out in your yard that a snake could hide under, whether that be a stack of firewood, just children's toys, all those things, And then beyond that, you know, just keeping your grass short. So if you got long grass, a snake is much easier. It can conceal itself much easier. And it's also concealed from you much easier, which could, you know, potentially lead to some bad outcomes. As far as food goes, you know, snakes, they don't all eat the same thing. But most of our venomous snakes are going to eat small mammals. And nobody's really trying to attract mice and rats to their yard, but doing things like having a bird feeder out, especially if a bunch of seed gets spilled, feeding your pets outside, things like that, that can bring in the rodents that then bring in the snakes.
When people want to know, what can I do for less snakes, or you reckon there's snakes there? Well, sure, we're outside. That's where snakes live. So those are things we can do to cut down on the problem, but never be able to eliminate the threat. Or when you're outside, that's where you're in their habitat.
And a lot of them are just foraging. They're going from place to another. A lot of times they're just as a surprise. If they're crossing the road, they're crossing the porch or a sidewalk, they're going from habitat to habitat. Like you said, typically looking for food or cover. A misconception is that snake has just moved in. They're in the house, they're under the house, they're in the attic, they're in the barn. They don't typically want to hang around unless there's shelter, food, or water, like you mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, they really don't want to stick around, especially out in the open. I have, you know, at my place, I've had a garter snake show up right by the garage. Saw it one time a few years ago. I've not seen a single garter snake since. Same thing with the big rat snake that was on my back deck. As Chip mentioned, you know, snakes are always going to be around. The South is a very, very snaky place. If you don't like snakes, move to Alaska. I mean, that's so we really do need to learn how to live with them. And if you want to keep down the numbers in your yard, yeah, keeping your grass short, keeping things picked up. So if you have a firewood pile, potentially get that elevated off the ground a little bit with some kind of holder. I love feeding birds, and I love snakes too, so it's not an issue for me. But if snakes really, really scare you, consider if you should continue feeding birds in your backyard. And even hummingbirds, because I've seen pictures of rat snakes going up poles, sitting at hummingbird feeders waiting for them to come back. You know, and we like landscaping as well. You know, we like things that make our property look attractive, but you also have to think, are those same things making my property more attractive for snakes? So for landscape plants, for example, instead of something that's really bushy and low to the ground that a snake could potentially hide under, you know, have something that has a stem that goes up a foot or two before it starts branching out. So there are options.
I wrote an article one time on lightning bugs. What can we do? It's a beneficial insect. What can we do to promote more lightning bugs? Well, everything we were doing would be beneficial to snakes, I can tell you. It's letting the grass grow up taller. And, you know, well, there's several things there. Letting your branches hang closer to the ground on trees. And I'm, snaky place. I want to mention one thing about snakes climbing. Obviously, I've watched two. It didn't take them long. I watched two rat snakes crawl 20 feet up a tree, and there was a hole in the tree, and that's where they were going. They knew that hole was there, and I saw them on the ground. And we just watched them, and it wasn't long. They were up there. The craziest thing to me on climbing, we had a well. We have a cover on this well. Nothing can get in there. The pump tore up. We're fixing it. We have this cover off. In those few minutes that we had this off, a snake got in the well. How you going to get a snake out of the well? I mean, there it is. How you going to get a snake out of the well? We put a rope down in the well. The snake climbed the rope and got out. I will say that was a tired snake when it got to the top. But that snake is a small snake. It wasn't venomous, but that was a tired snake when it got to the top. And it was a hand-dug well. It wasn't 200 feet deep. But that snake climbed that rope to get out, and that was the strangest thing I'd ever seen. And we're just rooting for that snake. You know, we want that snake to get out, and it did.
Address our control options, if you will.
Yeah, so moving beyond just making your backyard less welcoming, if it's safe to do, I'm always an advocate of relocation, especially for venomous snakes. If you're not trained to do it, though, you should not be doing it. There's no reason to touch a venomous snake with your bare hands. People that work with them professionally, unless they're doing something like milking them for their venom to produce anti-venom or other pharmaceuticals, they are using hooks and tongs and 5-gallon bucket. You know, a pillowcase or any other bag is a terrible idea for a venomous snake because they can bite right through that thing. But yeah, there are lots of people around. I mean, in the Auburn Opelika area, if somebody calls me with a venomous snake in their backyard, I'm happy to go over and take care of it. If it's a non-venomous snake, probably not. But there's a resource online, a free snake relocation directory. Not saying that, because it is completely volunteer run, not saying that somebody will be able to deal with that issue, but it's at least an option out there. It's a resource that people could come and check out. You know, I moved a cottonmouth out of my coworker's yard just a few weeks ago. So that does happen, and there are other people, at least with Alabama Extension, that are trained to do those things. So you could call your forestry, wildlife, natural resource agent, and they might be able to help you out. So relocation is one option. Certainly there's the lethal option, which I don't recommend. It's difficult because, you know, the venomous snakes are a human health risk. They're a risk to pets, so I'm not going to tell people what they should and shouldn't do in that regard. I will say, though, that if you do decide to dispose of a snake, just make sure that the kids and the pets and yourself aren't interacting with it after it gets done, because snakes can bite for hours after, for example, they're decapitated. So that's really something that it would be very unfortunate that you tried to deal with the problem and then made another problem. For people that want to try to better coexist with snakes, you know, walking up on a snake, yes, it's a scary thing. But just keep in mind, our venomous snakes, or snakes in general, they can't strike more than about half their body length if they're coiled. A really big rattlesnake is going to be 6 foot long. So as long as you're 5 foot away, there's nothing that snake can do to you. So if you want to take a long broom or a stick or something, try to get it to go on its way, because they don't want to interact with you. Something that's even better is if it's right around your house, if you've got a garden hose, you know, you can be 15 foot away and you can spray that snake mercilessly until it crawls off. So those are some ways to deal with snakes when you see the snake and you need it gone.
I think once we see a snake, the danger's over at that point. There could be a second snake, but once we see that snake shouldn't ever bite you. If we're further away, don't get close to it. What about if they're non-venomous? A lot of people just want to get rid of all of those. And I think, well, once we get rid of those, there's going to be rodents and things the snake likes to eat. If we get rid of the non-venomous, another snake, hey, you're still got that food source there, so they could take its place. And I'd rather it be the non-venomous than the venomous. So I always say, leave that one alone. That's a good snake to have. If you want to put them in a good category, that's at least one that won't kill you if it bites you. So I certainly wouldn't want to trade one for another. I'd rather, or the venomous for another venomous. If I've got a non-venomous, I'm happy.
Some would argue, what is a good snake versus a bad snake? And a lot of that opinions out there. Some of that's religious beliefs, some of those are cultural beliefs. You might even address that topic.
Sure. I mean, from a wildlife biology perspective, you know, animals aren't good or bad. Animals just are, and they're doing what they need to do to survive. There are some that are more dangerous to us or present more of a hazard. I mean, not just snakes, but alligators, to an extent, black bears.
We may can define it as either nuisance or not.
Yeah, what is a nuisance to some people is not going to be a nuisance to others. But I will say that, you know, like Chip said, the non-venomous snakes, aside from scaring you, or if you got backyard poultry, rat snakes really do love to eat chicken eggs. But other than that, you know, they are providing valuable services. They are eating the rodents. Rodents spread, aside from just being a nuisance, you know, getting into your bird seed or your feed or whatever, rodents spread a ton of diseases. And rodents are actually implicated in starting a bunch of house fires because they like to get inside attics. They like to chew on wiring. If we're talking about the true risk there, having those non-venomous snakes around really lowers the risk that something bad is going to happen at your place.
I have a king snake that has been around my place for years and years. Haven't seen it this year, but I have never seen a rattlesnake on my immediate property. And we attribute it because the king snake has been in that vicinity in addition to the rat snakes. I've had the good snakes on my property for several years and really only seen maybe one copperhead in 23 years.
Yeah, there are some snakes, some non-venomous snakes that For those that don't know, that specialize on eating other snakes, especially our vipers. So king snakes, you know, they will seek out especially copperheads, but also rattlesnakes. And then there are some other snakes like black racers. They eat anything that they can get a hold of, including smaller venomous snakes. So yeah, they're great to have around.
Wes, when you see a snake swimming in the water, can you tell from it how it's swimming, is it venomous or not?
That's a great question, and something that I get a lot. So it's really just going to – so if you see a snake sitting high on top of the water, it increases the likelihood greatly that it's a viper, so it's a venomous snake. That said, it's just one of those lines of evidence that you need to use. So always use multiple characteristics to identify if it's venomous or not. Because, you know, cottonmouths, yeah, when they're swimming, they'll sit high on the water sometimes, but they also eat fish. So they're perfectly fine diving under the water. You know, it does support that it's probably a venomous snake, but figure out something else, pattern, whatever, that will get you to, okay, yes, this is definitely a rattlesnake. This is definitely a cottonmouth.
What are some snake myths, or what is the most common myth that you answer just weekly sometimes?
Yeah, so it probably is that young snakes or baby snakes, either they're more venomous or they can't control their venom. So it's very, very dangerous to get bitten by a baby venomous snake. And that's just not true. They can control their venom. Their venom may be a little bit different in its properties than an adult, but not inherently more toxic by any means. So the worst snake to get bit by is the one that just bit you. Across the state, though, what would be the most dangerous? Yes, we have coral snakes, and they've got very toxic venom that essentially paralyzes you and you stop breathing eventually. But they're so rare that what would be the most likely risk to people across the South would be a large rattlesnake. If you're in the Piedmont or North or even down in the coastal plain where timber rattlesnakes occur, that would be the most likely. Once you get down into coastal Alabama, into Florida, you really don't have timber rattlesnakes anymore, but you do have eastern diamondbacks. So a bite from a big one of those would be the most dangerous thing to be bitten by.
Can they control how much venom they inject if they're biting something large or something small?
They can. And, you know, it's important to note, you know, venom is meant to kill their prey. That's why it's there. That'll stop a mouse or a rabbit dead in its tracks in less than a minute, and they'll be able to find it. And yes, it can be dangerous to us, but at the same time, you know, a snake bites you, that snake's life isn't necessarily saved. You're not going to keel over in a minute or two. So it's actually a pretty lousy defense in that sense. And yeah, snakes can control how much venom they inject because they want to keep it to protect themselves and, more importantly, to get food. You know, a proportion of bites, probably about 20%, the snake isn't injecting any venom at all. And we call that a dry bite.
If someone were to be suddenly bitten by a snake, and we hear it all the time in the news, especially during the summertime, someone bitten by a copperhead or reached into something and was bitten by a venomous snake, can you give us some tips and suggestions what people should do from a medical standpoint?
Yeah, definitely. So for our six venomous snakes, the only thing that is going to counteract the venom is anti-venom. So things that you can do immediately, take off constrictive clothing, take off your rings, take off boots, because our vipers, a bad bite from a viper is going to cause a lot of swelling. You might have to get your rings cut off. You might have to get your boots cut off. I know people who have experienced that. But get to the hospital and, you know, the hospital with a dedicated emergency room. So not an urgent care, not going to your family doc. They don't have anti-venom. I can tell you straight away they don't have any anti-venom. You need to go somewhere with an ER. There's still a lot of misconceptions in the medical community as far as when to properly treat a snake bite. There are people in the country that have fantastic expertise, and everybody's moving in that direction. But at the same time, the traditional advice was, oh, it's just a copperhead. You don't need anti-venom. And it's like, well, no, it shouldn't be based off of what snake bit you. It should be based off of your blood values, how quickly you're swelling, all that. Because a snake bite isn't something that you can tough out. I mean, you can, but the amount of tissue destruction is going to happen regardless of if you can actually stand the pain. So go get the antivenom if it's warranted, because that's the only thing that's going to stop that destruction from continuing.
You don't recommend tourniquets or anything like that?
No, not at all. It seems kind of counterintuitive, but you do want the venom to spread out a bit through your lymphatic system and elsewhere. Tourniquets are great in places like Australia, where they've got very different snakes with very different venom. But for snakes in the south, no, don't use a tourniquet.
All we've seen in Westerns growing up, where you make a cut and you try to suck the venom out, all that's just wise tales. Don't do anything like that.
Yeah, don't do anything like that. And again, cutting somebody or cutting yourself, that can lead to a whole bunch of other issues. Because you don't want to traumatize the site that's already undergoing trauma. But also, even with those venom extractors, you're not going to extract an appreciable amount of venom. What you could potentially do is further concentrate it in one area. And, I think it is important to know that the chance of dying from a snake bite in the United States is very low. Not to minimize any deaths, but 3 to 5 people a year across the entire country will die from a snake bite, even though they are dangerous. The biggest concern there is permanent disability. And that's why you get treated. Certainly, some of these bites could be lethal, but oftentimes what you're wanting to avoid is losing the use of your hand or your foot or wherever you got bit, and antivenom is what's going to help with that.
Chip, we've talked a lot about snakes, and this is highly valuable information. You and I are talking on the way down here for this podcast that our snake publications and videos seem to be one of the most popular resources we have, because this topic is very important in the summertime. People are always wanting to learn more about snakes. They see snakes. There's a snake. What is this snake? Especially from an identification standpoint, as well as a control methods that are suggested. So, Dr. Anderson, we appreciate you being here. We could definitely continue this conversation much, much further, and especially with other wildlife topics. We definitely want to have you back on that at some point.
Great information you shared with us. We appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Southern Ground. If you have any questions about snakes or any other gardening topics, just give us a call at your local extension office. We can be found online. It's the Alabama Cooperative Extension System, ACES.edu. Thank you for listening.
Southern Ground has been a production of Alabama Extension at Auburn University.